Good morning. Judge Ann Williams, who is a member of this panel, is not here and is not presiding, which she would be doing were she here, because unfortunately her father died yesterday. She will listen to the tapes of the argument and participate in the decision. All right, let's proceed with the argument in the first case, which is River of Life Kingdom Ministries versus Village of Hazelcrest. That's number 082819. Right, proceed with the argument.
Morning, Your Honors.
Morning.
Please the court. I am David Langdon, here today representing the appellant, River of Life Kingdom Ministries. The court in this case correctly held that River of Life had established a sufficient likelihood of success on the merits of its equal terms claim. But the court abused its discretion in the harms. The court should only have considered harm resulting from the church's use of its property pending resolution of this case in that short time period. There is no evidence in the record to support the claim that this temporary use would cause the village any irreparable harm. And so by holding that the village could suffer harm that would outweigh the harm to the church, the district court necessarily abused its discretion.
What would you be able to do in this interim period, what you call temporary use? What could the church do?
What the church would do during the time period in which the preliminary injunction were in place is it has to do some minor construction. It has to put up some walls in the warehouse portion to create an assembly hall where it will worship. And it will engage in activities of the church, the many activities that are identified in the record. It will certainly assemble for worship on Sundays and Wednesdays. It will engage in a variety of community outreach. It will improve the property. We've included in the short appendix at tab C pictures of the property and pictures of the surrounding properties. And it's an eyesore. It's a blighted area. And so the first thing the church will do will be to improve the outer appearance of the property. And in that way, we think, assist the village ultimately in its plans to try to rehabilitate and revitalize this particular area.
And if ultimately you were not able to stay there?
If the preliminary injunction is denied, most likely the church will not be able to afford to continue to make the mortgage payments and its rent payments until this litigation ends for the next year, however long that takes. If it uses the property in the interim, if the preliminary injunction is granted, but then ultimately loses the case, it will have to sell its property or convert it to a permissible use. But at least at that point, it will have, you know, it will have invested some money into the property and hopefully would be able to sell it.
Won't that provide a signal to everybody that the village will not be able to proceed with its redevelopment as it plans to do?
If the church locates there temporarily and then is forced to leave, will that provide a signal to the rest of the community?
Well, I mean, that's an indication that the village isn't going to be able to proceed with their overall plan, isn't it?
I'm not exactly sure I understand your question, Your Honor. If they locate there, if a preliminary injunction is granted and they're able to locate there, and they improve the property, and then they eventually are forced to leave, I'd be speculating as to what the rest of the community would think about that, other than perhaps they would know that there was a case going on, and ultimately the church lost its case. Hopefully, in the interim, the church will have done some good on the property and in the community, such that it will be worthwhile, and then ultimately they would sell the property, and it would be the church's hope that the village's plans would succeed, that they would eventually, in many, many years from now, have a high-rise condominium with the first-floor Starbucks on this particular property.
Do you think that's appropriate, though, if the Judge Gottschall found they only had a slight chance of prevailing on the merits? So why should they proceed temporarily if they've only got a slight chance of winning in the end?
Well, this court has repeatedly held, ever since the Roland case, I believe, in 1984, that the threshold is very low in terms of the likelihood of success on the merits. Judge Gottschall found that they had a slight likelihood of success on the merits. We think that she diminished their likelihood of success on the merits, that they have a greater than slight. But nonetheless, simply by having a slight chance of success on the merits, that then kicks in the balancing test. And the only way that the preliminary injunction should be denied is if the village will suffer irreparable harm, and that harm is greater than the harm to the church. Now, the district court, without any difficulty, found that the church is presently suffering irreparable harm by not being permitted to use its property, which has now been sitting vacant for a year. The church, however, the village, we believe, has not demonstrated that it is likely to suffer any irreparable harm whatsoever. All throughout the village's brief, no less than 9 different times in their brief, do they argue that the harm that they would suffer is purely financial in nature, a loss of tax revenue. This is a constant refrain in the village manager's testimony at the preliminary injunction hearing. This is all about lost tax revenue. Now, we fully acknowledge that generating tax revenue is a very important interest for a local government. There's no question about that, and certainly it's necessary for their TIF to be successful, and it's necessary really for any local government to do the things that it needs to do. In this case, though, it's altogether irrelevant because the church is paying taxes. The record shows that they have paid taxes, and the record shows that the church has committed to continue to pay taxes while the preliminary injunction is in place, assuming it would be granted.
And, of course, you're paying taxes on land that is not a church. Right.
Right. Yeah. Right now, they're paying taxes on a vacant building.
Whatever the real estate taxes, I assume that those are based on improvements or lack thereof. So, that's why you're paying taxes. It's not that if the church is approved, I assume that would be a tax exempt.
Well, if the preliminary injunction is granted and the church actually gets to operate as a church on the property, it has indicated it will continue to pay taxes. It's not required to under state law. It could apply for the religious exemption, but it is willing to waive that right and forego that right because of this case, frankly, because that is the, you know, the one argument that we continue to hear from the village is that they're concerned about the lost tax revenue. Well, we can take that off the table by saying we'll pay taxes, and they have, and they will continue to do so.
Now, is there, with a church in that location, is there some limitation on the surrounding businesses of which can and cannot operate there?
The village brought up a state law in Illinois that says that requires a buffer, a 100-foot buffer around churches where pubs and taverns and places of that sort are not permitted to locate. But I would submit to you that just last year, a unanimous panel of this court in the DeGruggier case said in response to the city of Indianapolis's identical argument on a nearly identical state law in Indiana, although that law was I think, 200 feet as opposed to 100 feet, that's not a germane consideration in a RLUIPA claim, in an equal terms claim. It's not a legitimate defense for a city or for a village to make to get out from under a violation of the equal terms provision of RLUIPA. As an additional matter, a practical matter here, we're talking about 100 feet, and it's not from property line to property line. It's from building to building. So it's very conceivable that a pub could open up across the street from the church. Now, all of this, of course, is very hypothetical. The village has what it calls very grand plans, and we applaud those plans, but this TIF district has been in place for nearly 8 years now, and we've not seen one new business come into the TIF area. They've not spent one penny of their TIF money. About all they've done is destroyed an existing tavern, and they're clearing some places for parking lots. But nothing is being done. The likelihood of a condominium with a first-floor pub wanting to locate in this particular area. And I would encourage you, if you've not looked at our short appendix, tab C, the full-color pictures of this area, pictures of the property, pictures of the surrounding properties, the suggestion that a building like that, a condominium with a Starbucks and a pub and so forth, is going to come in the short period that we're talking about here, while this case is being litigated, seems beyond the realm. It's unfathomable, inconceivable, frankly, that could happen in this short period of time based on the 8-year history we have now where nothing has happened. And this particular property in this area is in the northernmost part of the TIF district. And the TIF, you know, they've carved out, if you would look at the map on short appendix D, this property, as Judge Gottschall noted, is in the upper right-hand corner. It's away from the metro station. And their entire plan is sort of built around the metro station and this transit-oriented development that they want to do. But this property is up to the northernmost part of the district. And in the village's own plans, they've prioritized, in terms of years and time, when they want to develop particular sites. And the area where the church's property is located is in Category C. In our short appendix D, the very last page, you'll see that it's in the 10-plus years zone. Now, this was done back in 2001. So, assuming that they had been developing or redeveloping in accordance with their plan, the very earliest that the church's property would be ready for redevelopment is 2011. But in their plans, there are 10 other sites that are given higher priority than the church's property, and none of those have been redeveloped. So you could argue that they're 10 years away today from redeveloping the church's property. I see my time is up, and I'll reserve the rest for rebuttal.
May it please the court and opposing counsel, my name is John Murphy. I represent the village. I'd like to, during the course of my argument, kind of follow up on what a couple of the questions the court asked. But before I do, I need to correct the record on a few spots in the church's reply brief, which are just simply wrong. On pages 5, 6, and 7 of the church's reply, they contend that daycare centers are permitted uses in this B2 district. That, of course, goes to the issue of equal terms. That's not correct. As you will see from our Appendix D, daycare centers are not permitted uses. Following up on the court's question relating to liquor sales in the vicinity of churches and schools, the church's brief at page 14 represents that the village is not subject to this state law restriction. That's incorrect. And Section 4-32 of the Hazelcrest Village Code specifically provides that no new liquor establishment can come within 100 feet of a church. So that statement in the church's brief is incorrect. And finally, the church makes...
Is that relevant in light of the earlier case by Judge Posner?
Yes. The DeGruyler's case, as I'll pronounce it, the Indianapolis case didn't deal with this specific question. Indeed, the closest court of appeals case that deals specifically with this question is the Third Circuit's case in Lighthouse, which holds that if a municipality wants to create a restricted zone, this was more of a in the New Jersey case, it was more of a really bar, you know, a bar area. And because there was this same prohibition, no new liquor licenses near existing churches, the Third Circuit found it was perfectly permissible under equal terms to prevent churches and similar uses from locating in the entertainment district. So I think that's the distinction, Your Honor. In our view, the reply brief of the church has really simplified matters. The starting point on likelihood of success on the merits, which Judge Gottschall found was slight, is whether there is a potential equal terms violation. And the statute says that religious assemblies and land uses are supposed to be treated on equal terms with comparable, as the Indianapolis case said, non-religious assemblies or institutions. Our ordinance, the original flaw in the ordinance.
The Indianapolis case uses the word comparable. Do you think that puts us clearly into the following the Third Circuit on this point? That issue was not discussed at any length in that case.
It was. I think I would be overstating my position to say that was real hard language in the Indianapolis case, Your Honor, but I think that by making reference to there has to be a real similarity, and they also have to be assemblies or institutions. That's why the ordinance was in trouble when we had this proscription of meeting halls. The village board cleaned that up. So what we have now, that the only permitted uses are those that are found in exhibit or appendix D to our brief, and those are commercial tax-generating uses. The concept that a church is similar to a hotel or to a fitness gym, a Bally's Health Club, simply, we believe, does not pass the common sense test.
I thought hotels were taken out of the ordinance.
Meeting halls were taken out. Hotels are in, daycare centers are
still in, okay.
Taverns are in, cocktail lounges are in, the type of things you would want to see in a retail regeneration district. So if this court, by looking at what uses are permitted in B2, determines that none of those uses are secular assemblies or institutions within the scope of equal terms, that ends the matter in terms of likelihood of success on the merits, because then it dips from slight to none. You will see from the church's reply brief that they have, at least at this stage, abandoned any free exercise claim, equal protection, or substantial burden claim. We think that in simple terms, plain English, and common sense, if we allowed the Hazelcrest Democratic Club or the Hazelcrest Stamp Collecting Society to locate in this district while not allowing a religious group that assembles for their purposes, the ordinance would be in trouble under equal terms. But taverns, restaurants, none of those are in any way comparable to a church or religious assembly, because people are not coming together as a group for a common purpose, be that secular or non-secular. So from the very beginning, we don't believe the church gets out of the starting gate in terms of the analysis under equal terms. That then
What's
brings
your answer to Mr. Langdon's argument about enjoining enjoining the ordinance for a temporary period and then reaching another result?
My answer is, I think, the rhetorical point the court was seeking to make by asking the question, that it becomes a slippery slope. If the marketplace knows now that this church can locate here, well, next week, next month, next year, another church can locate there, and that has the potential, as the district court found, in terms of weighing the equities, of unraveling the Hazelcrest TIF district, or at least injecting an additional area of uncertainty into the TIF district, which cuts against the very reason that it was formed. So I think that's the response of Judge Gottschall, and that's my response to the question of opposing counsel.
Is this TIF design kind of a hypothetical, though? It seems that if it's been in place for, 8 years, that it's not exactly moving forward.
Two responses to that, Your Honor. It was formed in early 2000. It's a tough area of the village. I don't know if you know the south suburbs at all. It's if you take the what used to be the IC south towards Champaign to go to a U of I game, it'd be Hazelcrest and Flossmoor, Olympia Fields. Hazelcrest has become run down. We don't have much tax base at all, other than one shopping center. The village board has determined that the metro station is an asset. It's a potentially huge asset with what's coming along. And so we've spent a lot of money, Your Honor, in terms of establishing the TIF district, working with Metro. We've spent a lot of money lowering the viaduct, getting the property ready for redevelopment. We have entered into contracts to demolish properties to try to make the area more attractive so that we can take advantage of what we thought until at least till the last 6 months was an economy interested in people locating near commuter stations because of gas prices. Now, my second point, Judge, is a little more philosophical. Obviously, this TIF district was not put in to roadblock a church. You know, goodness, I think we created it before RLUIPA became law. I represent a lot of towns. Municipalities are really the laboratories of democracy on socioeconomic issues. A municipality has a TIF district that lasts up to 23 years. We have the right to fail. We are, of course, dissatisfied with the fact that the market, even with these incentives, haven't accepted us, hasn't located in Hazelcrest. There's a lot of problems in Hazelcrest. There was rapid demographic changes. But we have the right to try. And this property is one of the few properties in the village. And it's kind of hard when you're looking at a record and looking at maps where, you know, one inch equals 250 feet to realize this is really a tight area. This is what the village has determined to be within easy walking distance to the metro station. Those are the equities that the district court determined, and those are the equities that we would ask this court to keep in mind. We're at the very, very preliminary stages. Your honors are aware there was no discovery. Sometimes on preliminaries you at least have an early round of discovery. There was nothing at all here, a 3-hour preliminary injunction hearing before Judge Gottschall. So in terms of fleshing out the record, we think that there is work to be done on their other claims. But a municipality has the right, we believe, without running afoul of the equal terms provision of RLUIPA, from doing this experiment. Maybe the market will accept us next year or the year after. And that's, at this point, by allowing the church what really is a mandatory injunction. It's not simply, you know, an injunction is the preservation of the status quo. Well, what is being asked here is a change of the status quo to order the village to step back from its zoning, issue building permits, issue occupancy permits for religious land use, which is inimical to what the corporate authorities of the municipality have determined to be their last best chance to have what Downers Grove has, what Lake Forest has, which is a vibrant area near the commuter tracks where people can live, work, spend money. And I would just close with making reference to this court's decision in the club case. That's the Civil Liberties United versus City of Chicago, one of the very early RLUIPA cases, where the court closed its opinion by saying conserving the taxable value of city land is an important public purpose. Why? Because by generating incremental tax revenue in this one area, it'll help us provide goods and services, help us pave the streets and provide police protection in the areas of the town where the churches are now, where the people live now. So saying that our goals are purely financial is really giving short shrift to the extremely difficult job that municipalities have in trying to balance all of these interests and hopefully achieve a quality of life for all of its residents. So for all of those reasons, we'd ask.
What can they do now with this land? They paid $150,000 or so for this land. In the meantime, I guess they continue to pay taxes. Is there anything they can do with it, since they own it, that would not be objectionable?
Well, any of the uses that are allowed under...
Completely separate businesses.
They would have to devote it to a business use during the pendency of this litigation in order to conform to the code.
And an agreement to pay taxes doesn't do any good, is that?
Agreement to pay taxes, Your Honor, I think would be a horrible precedent for the village. First of all, it would be it would create the opposite buzz or vibe that the village is trying to create in the TIF district. by allowing non-retail uses. It would be, you know, a gratuitous promise anyway, but it's not the goal of the village is not the $2,500 or $3,000 that a church building would pay in property taxes. It's the long-term future of attempting to utilize the Illinois Central commuter station as our hub.
What is businesses? I don't know. I look at your maps and things. I don't know the area. Are there businesses in that area that are actually in operation?
There's a few, and they are struggling.
Are they the kind that would attract other business and grow, or are they these sort of ones that are just hanging on and not very attractive?
There are a few businesses. There certainly is nothing like what you would expect in terms of a revitalized area. There's no Starbucks yet. There's no Caribou Coffee.
You're going the other way, too.
Times are tough, but all the more reason to allow this TIF district to stay in place, so at least we will have some incentives to lure these people when the economy turns around. And
they are paying taxes now, though, I guess.
Well, the property is paying taxes, but interestingly, if a church owns property, they can get an exemption tomorrow under our tax codes. It's property owned by, just like if the village buys a piece of property, even though it's a warehouse, we can get a tax exemption because it's our property. So that's they are free to exempt that property from property taxes. Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honors, the church's offer to continue to pay taxes may be gratuitous, but it is something that they are willing to bind themselves to in the event that a preliminary injunction is granted. Pastor Alexander testified on the stand under oath in front of Judge Gottschall that they would continue to pay taxes if a preliminary injunction is granted. So it should be a done deal that they will do that, and frankly, it could be in the order that we are required to continue to pay taxes. So that is a non-issue. I want to address the merits very briefly. I want to repeat that this court has continually and repeatedly held that in a preliminary injunction stage, or at the preliminary injunction stage, on the merits, the threshold is very low. Now, we think we've far exceeded that. Judge Gottschall disagreed, but she did find that we have a slight likelihood of success on the merits, and that was not without foundation. Just last year in the DeGruggier case, Mr. DeGruggier was my client, so I learned how to pronounce his last name. In that case, the court held that daycare centers are very similar for zoning purposes to churches. In fact, if I could quote Judge Posner, he singled out daycare centers as being, quote, like churches so far as anything connected with the interests protected by zoning is concerned. Now, that was an equal treatment case, and in that case, the city of Indianapolis allowed daycare centers and other secular assembly uses but didn't allow churches, and the court ultimately found that the church had demonstrated a sufficient likelihood of success on the merits because the city allowed daycare centers and others.
What is the state of the law as to comparability in this circuit, in your opinion?
I think that you look, as this circuit has done, you look at the definition of what an assembly is, a gathering of people for a common purpose. And there's certain assumptions that have been made in the cases. For example, in the DeGruggier case, the panel made certain assumptions. They looked at the variety of things that the village allowed, all of these assembly uses like daycare centers, and determined these are assembly uses from a zoning perspective. The village would have you believe that paying taxes or not paying taxes, or commercial versus nonprofit, is somehow relevant from a zoning perspective. But it isn't. Zoning has to do with land use, and so when you're talking about gymnasiums, recreational centers, daycare centers.
What is it that makes a church comparable to a gymnasium?
It's where people gather for a common purpose. A gymnasium, a recreational center, these are uses that were identified by Congress in the legislative record.
Is a gymnasium an assembly in any sense?
Well, there can be a gymnasium where people come and they work out individually, okay? Or there could be a gymnasium where a group of people gather together for what you name it.
Basketball game.
for a political gathering, for that matter, at a gymnasium. Certainly, if you think of a school gymnasium, that was where we always held our assemblies. That was what they were called when we would gather in the gymnasium. So these are all places where people assemble. And again, the focus, I think, needs to be on what is the land use impact. And that's what Judge Posner saw in the DeGruggier case, that these are very similar uses. The city is improperly drawing distinctions based on religion or secular use of it. Your Honors, we believe that that we have demonstrated a sufficient likelihood of success on the merits, and that the village has not demonstrated that it will suffer any irreparable harm in the very short window of time in which this case is litigated. We're not talking about long-term impact here. We're simply talking about this short period of time. If the church does not get its preliminary injunction, in terms of the hardship, looking at the hardship one way or another, if the church doesn't get its preliminary injunction, it's most likely going to be forced to sell the property. It will never have its full day in court. If it does get it, however, and it eventually loses this case, it'll pack up and leave. Thank you, Your Honor.
The case will be taken under advisement.